Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy. Hey folks, this is episode number 169, and this week we're going to have Anthony Corder on. When you see Anthony Corder on, you will notice that it is only his picture because it was a telephone interview, and you will also notice that Bill's there, but Dennis is not there. We don't have Bill here right now because Bill's out of town having fun. Or
Bill's having a margarita probably by now.
Or some Fireball.
Or Fireball. And he's in Florida.
Fireball Bill. Laura's in Florida, too. Hey, wait a minute.
Wait.
Whoa.
you might need to call and find out what's going on.
Yeah, I think they're in different parts of Florida, though.
I gotcha.
All right. Well, this pre-show, I think, is going to be pretty short because I don't have any... I don't have anything to say.
You don't have anything? Nothing to say?
I will bring up the fact that it appears that Vinnie Vincent has canceled another show. Who didn't see coming?
You mean the speedball thing is not going to happen? All right. So here's my thing. I want to do one thing here.
Do it.
And this will be the last time you will ever hear me talking about Vinnie Vincent.
I don't believe that.
Quote, I hear you. No, you've got these typical bashers out there that Vinny's not going to show up. Well, that's complete bullshit. So go fuck yourself, you fucking morons. How dare you say such a fucking thing like that? This is happening. That is a direct quote from Vinnie Vincent. I'm done. I will not bring up his name. I'm not talking about him no more. You know, Vinny, you have treated your fans. Gene was right. All the stories about you are true. And, you know, shame on you. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it is really sad that the guy can't get out of his own way.
Yeah. And the thing is, he had the opportunity of a lifetime to come back. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
You see this landmine? I'm going to set it right here. Now I think I'm going to step on it. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, Vinny, okay, we're done with you.
So, anyway, I hear you. Did you go to a concert this past weekend?
Yes, I did.
Tell us about it.
Okay, I went to Deer Creek/Clips/ Verizon/Ruoff Mortgage Company, whatever it is now. I went up there hey, there's Bill texting us. Anyway. Anyway, I went to see The Who, and my wife and I had got tickets earlier on. I had bought yard tickets, and thanks to Mr. Bill, he sent me a message earlier in the afternoon or that morning saying that he had a phone. Somehow he gets from Live Nation, he gets these updates, and they said that they were offering upgrades on seats. And so he gave me the link for this deal. Well, they weren't doing it for up till it was like 4 or 5 hours before the show. So out on the drive up there, I looked at it and they said it was open at that point. And he said, you can upgrade your seats for $25 a piece from a lawn ticket to a actual seat. So I upgraded for $50. We had chairback seats. We were right center. I mean, it was perfect. I mean, it was well worth. I think those tickets originally, when I looked at them, they were around $140 for that section, and so I ended up getting them for $45, so about right around $70. So that's one thing that's good about that. If you buy the lawn seats, you can maybe sometimes, if they don't sell out the show, that you can get an upgrade.
Hopefully, when I go see Iron Maiden, I'll get an upgrade.
Yeah. So the show itself, though, I'm telling you what, I Googled right as soon as they got started and we were started listening to them, and I Googled just to find out exactly. Roger Daltrey is 75 years old, and the man sounds like he's 25. And Pete Townsend is 74 and plays like he's 24.
Do you think Pete gave anybody windmill cancer while he was at the show?
I don't know. But I tell you what, they're doing this tour here. They're doing with the symphony orchestra, and they are actually all new. Every time they go to a new town, they basically just get these new players. They have a cellist and a violinist that go along with them, and they're kind of they call them the librarians. They're the ones that are in charge of getting all the paperwork to all the orchestra people. I think they come in like a day early. They do a little run through with them. And then they have a music director. And then it's basically Roger. Pete's brother, Simon, he is playing guitar and traveling with them now, which I didn't know he even had a brother. And real good guitar player also. The bass player did not catch his name and did not catch the drummer's name. But I'm going to tell you what, they basically did all the good parts of Tommy. And then they gave them a break, the orchestra. Then they did about six songs, kind of acoustic and four-piece, you know, just kind of a regular Who type thing. Then they brought the orchestra back again and then played a few more songs than the rest of the night. Kelly was one of those ones that she was so glad that we went. I mean, it was just, you know, she afterwards is like, man, I'm really glad we went to this, because it was, I mean, like I said, it was, I got to see somebody that I had never seen before, and these guys are icons. I mean, they've been here around for 50 years, and if you get a chance to see The Who, go see them.
I think it's creeping up on 60 years, dude.
Yeah, it is, actually.
They've been around for a long time.
Well, I mean, you got to figure, they headlined at Headstock, Woodstock.
Woodstock. That's funny.
They would line at Hipstock, but anyway. It was a really good show. And like I said, Indianapolis time, we were out of there. We got home about 1 o'clock in the morning, and we drove straight through. If you are going to the Ruhoff Center up there, Sleepy Bear Campground, go there, pay $20, and park your car. You can get in and out of that place in no time. It's the best kept secret of the Ruhoff.
Well, not anymore.
We use it every time. It's awesome. And the only thing else I got, I did buy tickets for Pat Benatar and Nick Girardi. Is it Girardi?
Girardi. That sounds correct. Now they're coming to Evansville, right?
Yes, they're coming to the Victory on July 7th. That's 2 days after my birthday. So I bought tickets for my birthday.
Oh, that's
ticket.
Right. You share a birthday with my brother. I forgot.
The 5th, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've been wanting to see Pat Benatar for a long time. And actually, I thought it was kind of an acoustic type show. But a buddy of mine seen it, and it's the 40th anniversary of her album, or I guess her first album coming out. So they're playing with a band and doing a lot of the old cuts and stuff. So.
Well, you know, he's always been the guitar player in Pat's band.
Right.
So,
exactly.
I mean, those two basically are Pat Benatar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm looking forward to that, and so I got tickets for that, and I think that's about it ticket wise. And any other music kind of things going on with you? I know Bill couldn't be here this.
I've been listening to an audiobook called "Snakes, Guillotines, Electric Chairs: My Adventures in the Alice Cooper Group" by Dennis Dunaway.
Oh, really?
This book is like almost 11 hours of audio time.
Oh.
And Dennis reads the book himself.
Cool.
You know, now I will not say that Dennis is a great orator as he's reading, but he's telling his stories, and you can hear when he's telling some of the stories that he's feeling the stories all over again.
Wow.
You know, and it's a great book. It's just, you make a lot of time. I listen to it when I travel back and forth to work, and anytime I'm in my car.
So is it basically just about on the road with Alice, those first,
well,
it's, beginning years? Or
It's the beginning years. It's when they were all still in high school together and they first formed the Earwigs.
Sure.
as a mock beat, you know, mocking the Beatles or whatever. And then
right.
The transition from the Earwigs to the Nazz to, you know, they had a couple of different names before they came up with the Alice Cooper
Sure.
thing, you know. So it talks about all of that. It talks about how each person in the band, you know, how they came together, how the band worked as an organization, and
cool.
I'm up to the point now to where it's all starting to the Alice Cooper band,
right,
or the Alice Cooper group, whatever that entity,
however
it was supposed to be called,
sure,
is starting to come unraveled.
Okay.
So I still have like 2 hours worth of listening to do, but
right,
we've gotten past the part where everybody loves Vince Vernier.
Gotcha.
So, but that's, I mean, awesome. You have to take this, some of this, with a grain of salt, because this is Dennis's point of view of how things right. went. Well, and the only thing that I'm really going to say about that is sometimes the way he tells the stories, it's like he came up with all of the good ideas in the Alice Cooper group. Yeah. I don't think that's probably right.
Well, it's one of those situations where, like you said, you got to take it with a grain of salt, because it is his perspective and his opinion and his way he saw it. Now, that's
right. Now, person. I would like to see all of the other members of the band who are still alive to do their own, and I'd like to read all of the different ones and see how many of the stories kind of mesh together, and, you know, they're not contradicting each other.
Oh, cool. Because, if you
read any of the four original members of Kiss, their right. books, from their point of view, is the other three members in this band are just fucking idiots, and I saved the fucking band. You
know? Exactly.
And that's exactly. not true. I'm not sure when it came out. I didn't even know it was out.
That's what I'm saying. Is
a friend of mine in St. Louis was like, man, you've got to listen to this, you know. So I got it, and I was like, I was expecting like a 3 or 4 hour read, like the Paul Stanley book was, and I got that thing loaded on my phone, and I'm like, 10 hours and 58 minutes? Shit. Oh. So that's a couple of weeks worth of listening to there.
Yeah, cool. I have to check that out. I'd like to read that, so, or listen to it, actually.
Yeah.
I've never listened to a book on tape. I've always
you know, if I try to sit down and actually read a book,
I got through a bunch of them there for one time. I read Sammy Hagar's Red, which is a really good read. I read Ozzy.
The guy that read his book did a really good job of reading it, because he sounded like what Sammy Hagar probably sounded like in the 70s during his coming up from nothing.
Right. Yeah, I liked that book a lot. I read Ozzy's book, which I thought was really good. Read Vince Neil's book. Really wasn't impressed with it at all.
That's because it's only every third word in the book.
Right. And then, I would buy them on my Kindle.
Hey, Vince, you want to come on a podcast?
he's eating a fucking cupcake the whole time he's fucking talking it. So, anyway. Or whatever he's got in his hand. All right. Let's stop bashing. Let's go to our, how about we have a guest today. So won't we just do that?
All right. Here's Anthony Corder, y'all.
Anthony Corder from Tora Tora, man. How are you doing?
Hey guys, man, thank you so much for having me today, man. I'm so excited to talk to you guys. I just appreciate your time so much.
No problem. The last time we chatted, I think, was at the Rockin' Pod Expo last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Man, I know, time is flying by. It's just crazy, man. Man, what a great experience, though. Chris and that the whole staff at that event is amazing. And I know they put a lot of planning into it and a lot of time and effort, and man, it just came off great. Everybody was super professional. They had great panels. The memorabilia part of it was awesome. And then we got to hang out with y'all. We got to play a show. And we got to see y'all the next day and do some interviews and stuff. And, man, it's such a huge part. I just want to personally just say thank you to you guys for giving us a platform and an outlet, man, to get to our audience. This is amazing, the things that you guys are doing. And for Chris to throw this thing where you guys were all together at one time where you could see each other and network and talk and catch up. I mean, we're all, you know, time's flying by. We got 1,000 things in the fire, but you get to just let your hair down and hear some great music and hang out in Nashville. Man, it's a great city. So that was just an amazing experience. And hopefully it's going to be a big success this coming year.
Yeah. Are you going to be able to be there this year?
We are holding a date, but I want to support it, man. I want to be a part of it every year. I see it growing and just becoming just a huge event. I'm not kidding. I told Chris from the very beginning, I actually approached him kind of in a selfish way, just because we were wanting to promote the record. We were just wrapping up the recording sessions in Memphis. We had recorded down at Sam Phillips Studio. And the week that you guys were in town we were delivering the recordings to Frontiers. And so we were like, this would be amazing. We could jump on stage, we could play a couple of new songs, and then we could, you know, talk about the release date coming up and some of the songs that we're going to drop. And it was just the stars kind of lined up. And but it's an amazing thing. And yeah, I will be there. If I'm in the city, I'm going to be over there going crazy. I think we're supposed to confirm with Chris here in the next week or so.
Cool. That'd be great. It was a lot of fun catching up with you and stuff like that. It is a blast. I mean, I think that it the first year, it was kind of amazing. After that very first year we did it, it was, there's just friendships that bonded, and it's kind of weird. It was kind of like we'd known each other for a long time after about the first hour, and
yeah,
it was pretty cool. So, you know, we've met those guys a couple of different times at different places here, you know, off and on. And, yeah, we're really looking forward to getting back down there in August. So hopefully you'll be there and we can get to hang out. That'd be awesome. Be great to see you again.
We'll do it for sure.
So talk a little bit about Bastards of Beale. That came out in January or February, right?
Yeah, it came out. We had talked to Frontiers about the release date. We let a sneak peek static video out December 6th or 7th, right around in there, and dropped a song called Rose of Jericho, which was, we had kind of talked about which song on the record we wanted to drop, and we felt like that was a pretty straight ahead kind of rocking tune. And then in January we did another sneak peek, Silence the Sirens, which was kind of an outlier on the record. It was the one that, it just had kind of a different feel to it. It was one that kind of stuck out to us that we said, you know, this one would be fun to let out. And while we were planning all those dates and stuff, we started thinking about Monsters of Rock Cruise was coming up. We mm-hmm. went on it, and it set sail the 24th of February. So we let the record out the 22nd. So we were jumping on the boat to let everybody know that they were going to hear about it first on the boat. We were going to play them some new songs, and we actually took some physical product with us, so they were going to get it first on the cruise. So we were really planning it probably about, I don't know, last summer, 2018. We were talking about the dates and how everything was going to line up. And, man, Frontiers has been amazing. Nick and those guys are, you know, they're working with a ton of artists. They're giving people like us an opportunity to be back out and connect with the fans and stuff. And the stars just kind of aligned for us. When they approached us, I think, or at least in my mind personally, I was hoping that we would get together and record some new stuff at some point. But we were, you know, just being transparent with y'all, we were all raising families and kind of had stuff external things outside of music going on. But when they came along, it was just right after our bass player had a health issue. He had been diagnosed with cancer, and he got a clean bill of health. Everything was great, and the doctors cleared him. And the first thing he said is, I want to get on the road and go see people. He goes, I don't care if we're playing to five people or 5,000 or whatever. He said, I just want to get on the road. And all of us kind of had a new perspective on life. Man, we've known each other for 30 years. We lived some pretty crazy lifestyles, you know, a long time ago. So anything about our health is kind of serious when we're kind of getting a little bit further, you know, a few waves down the road. And so anyway, when he was okay, we hit the Monsters of Rock. And 2017, that was our first time to do it. And, man, we found our tribe. We got on there, and we saw all of the bands. We knew the bands on there. We had toured with a bunch of them. The fans were amazing. I mean, that Larry Moran, the guy running it, has put it together, and it's an awesome experience. I get to just hang with you, and they got all these activities that we do together as a group, and we enjoy it just as fans of seeing the other bands. But anyway, talking about Frontiers, they approached us in 2017 and asked us if we would be interested, and it was just like, I think the whole issue with us through the years is always just, is the time going to be right? And it happened to land right when we all kind of looked at each other and went, hey man, the kids are getting bigger, we're not cool anymore, they don't want to hang out with us, they all have their own agendas and they're doing their own thing, and maybe we could sneak away and, you know, have some rehearsals and do some writing. You know, our passion for writing and the love of music and being creative and everything has never gone away, man. I mean, I'm, you know, 30 years in, and I still remember sitting on the edge of my bed strumming my guitar for the first time. You know, my uncle and aunts were showing me guitar chords, and just music was so powerful to me. It was ingrained in me. My family was real musical on my mom's side, and they had introduced the love of music to me for as far back as I can remember, from everything from Mississippi John Hurt to Kiss to, you know, James Taylor, Neil Young, Boston, and, you know, and the list goes on from, you know, about the 70s, man, Janis Joplin and or even back Stax and then backtracking into Elmore James, all these crazy influences. But it had just been so big part of my life, man, that it's never gone away. And we've all been creative, you know, even outside from each other. We've all still worked on projects and been writing and helping artists, you know, producing people and all that. So when this came along, it was just a huge opportunity. It was just kind of like we got a breath of fresh air, man. It was like we just took this big breath and we were excited. We were kind of wondering what it was going to sound like, because it had been a second, you know, between our records. The last thing that was official with anything was we were in the studio working on a recording that ended up being Revolution Day, and that was like 94. And we had done some outtake releases, you know, some previously unreleased material through like a little solo label here in Nashville. But this was new, and we didn't backtrack. We didn't go find other ideas from a long time ago or anything that was laying around. I mean, we walked in, it was just and being honest with y'all on the interview, is we put a piece of white poster board on the wall like we did when we were little kids, man. And we put, you know, we put the titles up there, even if it was dummy titles. And then we put, you know, arrangements, vocals, parts, solos, and just started working on it. And it was just, man, it was amazing. You know, when I walk in and Keith and John and Patrick are there and they hit a chord, I close my eyes and I smell stale beer and cigarettes. And I think I'm 18 years old. I really do. I like feel like, and you know, and then I start singing. I realize, you know, I'm a little bit further down the road, but it just, there's something about the three of them and the way they play their instruments that is our sound. And that's what our producer Jeff Powell, that worked on Bastards Bill with us, he's been a friend of the band for 25 years. He worked as an assistant engineer on Wild America. He knew us, and he actually came. We did a benefit show for Patrick when he was sick in Memphis to kind of help with his medical bills. And we had some people show up. A matter of fact, a lot of musicians showed up, and a lot of people from around the music community sent things for us to auction off, which was amazing. I mean, everybody from the guys in Winger and Foo Fighters and all kind of stuff showed up at this venue. It was amazing. People played and sang. He just contacted me a couple of months after that event, and just he works out of Sam Phillips Studio in Memphis, and he cuts straight to vinyl. So he's one of the only people in North America that does it. Well, he called me and just said, or sent me a message and said, "Man, I can't quit thinking about y'all's event." And he said, "It's the four of y'all when you get together. That's the tour sound." He said, "Do you want to come cut a couple of singles with me?" And he didn't know at the time that we were talking to Frontiers. And so I got back in touch with him. I said, "Man, you're not going to believe this. We don't want to just come cut two. We want to cut a whole project when you have time." And so it was amazing to work with him. I mean, he's kind of like a family member. We've known him so long. And he was a great resource to us just to have as far as all of our pre-production that we wanted to do. We're not working on budgets and stuff like we used to in the 80s, you know, when there was physical product going out the door. We had huge budgets, and we'd spend you know, a week trying different drum heads on and, you know, getting different sounds. And and also we're further down the road, man, as far as like knowing ourselves and our instruments and all that kind of stuff. We kind of had our sound dialed in. But Jeff made it a really, really easy process. And we told him, we said, "Listen, we got to be as efficient as we can." Especially, I was traveling from Nashville down to Memphis, so we were kind of limited on our time together. And then we knew that we were going to have limited time in the studio. So he was real accommodating, and he got us to relax. He said, "Man, dude, this is going to be, we're going to do it like the old days. We're going to walk in and hit record, and you guys are going to go for it live." And it was so cool, y'all. I mean, the whole experience of working with him, I walked in, and it's the place, the studio, I don't even know if y'all are familiar with it, but it looks like 1960s when you walk in. I mean, it's still decorated. It looks like Sam Phillips is fixing to walk in any second.
Cool.
But everybody from Robert Plant to Bob Dylan to all the Stax people, I mean, it's a list that goes on and on of people that's recorded there. And so we went in, and the band was set up live in the room, and they had me in an ISO booth. And they said, "If you get it, you got it. If you want to come back and re-sing it, it's no big deal." But the band went for the tracks live, the drums and the bass and the rhythm guitars. And
that's cool. That's really cool. You can, you know, it's amazing when you can tell such a difference when that happens on a record. It just has a different vibe to it. You can almost feel it.
It does feel different. And I mean, we're super proud of our other records. You know, we feel like we invested a lot of time in those. Some of those records, the Wild America one, we probably wrote on it for 2 years because we were touring and traveling and coming back and doing, you know, pre-production and recording and all that stuff. This time we wrote it and we went in and we were, I mean, cutting it for real, cutting it live. We just went in and we went for the feel of the track, and we wanted to make sure John and everybody felt good about the take and all that kind of stuff. So it was a different approach. And then the really awesome part was I went back to re-sing the record, and I only had a limited weekend that I could do it. And I went back, and there was a guy named William Bell, who's a really famous stack singer. He had rented the studio. And, I mean, you're not going to, you know, throw a fit about somebody like with his kind of status and everything. It was like, man, this is William Bell. He's probably in his 80s, but man, his voice still sounds amazing. And I love the stack stuff, you know, from Memphis and all that. But anyway, I told them, I said, hey man, just stick me in a closet. I don't care, whatever. Just when I come back, I want to do it in Memphis. They were like, you know, you want us to send tracks to Nashville or whatever? And I said, no, I'm singing. I want to do it at Sam Phillips and I want to do it in Memphis. And so, y'all, I went back, and the building is like the first floor are studios, A and B, and then there's a stairwell that goes up, and there's like a distribution. It's a room that's got red shag carpet in it. It's pretty big. It's got some shelves in it, but it's where they used to store all their albums and stuff. When Sam branched out on his own, he used to have, you know, physical product in there. And then as you go up another set of steps, you go to the third floor, and that's where all the offices were. And you're not allowed to take any pictures. There's a bar up there that's still decorated like 1950, man. It's awesome. It's got like a cigarette burn on the top of it where they were in there getting drinking and having a good time. And the general manager's office and, of course, Sam's office. Well, the day that I came down there, man, they said, come here. We want to show you something. And they took me up the first flight of stairs, and they turned the second set of stairs. And Sam Phillips' doors to his office were open, and my microphone was sitting in his office. And I like to die.
Holy shit.
I'm not kidding. You're not even allowed to go in there. And they had me set up. They had done everything mobile. And they said, we wanted you to cut it. And you said you wanted to be here. So we're going to do it up here. And so it was me and the producer, Jeff Powell, and Keith, my guitar player. He sat with me the whole weekend. I sang 5 songs on Saturday and 5 on Sunday. But man, y'all, it was red shag carpet. It had like white leather chairs in there. Each chair had like a stand up 70s cigarette ashtray by it. It looked like Air Fist had a party in there. And we were waiting for Sam to walk in. I mean, that's what it looked like. And then across the room, there was this old television set that was probably from the late 50s, early 60s. And it had a drawer on it that people would pull out, and it had a 45 sitting on it. And it was Roy Orbison's record sitting on there. And so I looked at that little 45 in between all my takes. I'd look down and go, oh, my God, I'm sitting in Sam Phillips' office, and I'm singing my new record, and here's Roy Orbison's 45 sitting there. It was inspiring,
is,
man.
That's
y'all,
cool as hell, man.
I just go, man, this is crazy that we get to do this and be a part of this. And it was just so fun. And like I said, it was really fast, the whole experience. But I think we, like, captured something really cool. We didn't overthink everything. We did a lot of prep before we went in the studio. Jeff was real accommodating that way. So we went in and we made a map, and we went through and just picked out the things that we were going to need to work on. And we told him, you know, what our timeline was and what our budget was. And we said, if we can do this and pull it off. And he said, I'm going to make it work. We're going to do it. So it was so fun. I mean, I loved it. We had the best time, and I'm really happy about how the songs turned out. You know, it's been a long time. And what I was telling y'all before is we were kind of nervous too, because we weren't sure what would it be, you know, when we got finished with it. But we just felt like that title, the Bastards of Bill, there was a lady named Sherry Sloan that did an article on us back in the early 90s. And she came and hung out with us in Memphis one weekend. And she titled her magazine article, The Bastards of Bill Street. And that's kind of where we got the inspiration from. Hmm. And
well, thanks for answering my next question.
Oh yeah, we also think of it as, it's kind of a tribute to, we feel like Bill Street's touched a lot of people all over the world, man. Not only just people like us rock and roll people, but it means something different to a lot of people. And the song itself is kind of a tribute to it, talking about W.C. Handy and him starting it. And Robert Church, he was the guy that started Beale Street, you know, after the yellow fever epidemic in Memphis. He went in and bought all that land, and it was just a dirt road. It wasn't, there was nothing down there, man. And he built it up with all those, the money that came in. I mean, he kind of was, he's got a great story. There's a book about it, Beale Street Dynasty, and it talks about he came in and he kind of opened some brothels, and he had some people down there partying and having a good time, but he earned a lot of money, and then he got swayed from the dark side. He ended up trying to help the community after he had become a millionaire. He started kind of giving back to the community and helping people down there. So it was kind of a cool story, and that kind of inspired the start of the song, the Bastards of Beale. Our bass player, Patrick, had brought in the music, and we were talking about it, and Keith and I were talking about, he was had read a review of that book, and we were talking about all the stuff, and just growing up there to us, y'all, I mean, that's where we cut our teeth. We went down there and we'd sneak in and watch people play the touristy kind of blues bars and all that kind of stuff, and we made friends with them, and we played at the New Daisy on Beale Street. It was a little 900 seat theater, you know. Growing up, that's where we started, and we did band competitions and all kind of stuff down there, and it's just you know, it's had a big impact on our life. And but when you mention being from Memphis, or you mention Beale Street anywhere in the world, if you're talking to people about music and stuff, it really resonates with people. Mm-hmm. They recognize it.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you know, it's kind of funny, I've been a lot of places, but Memphis is never as a place I haven't been yet. And I know Dennis spent, what, he went there last summer or the summer before that, and they were talking about, I think they actually, they've been there a couple of times to some shows and things like that. And he likes going down there. I've never been. I just got to get down there. I just haven't.
Just, man, haven't, if you ever go, but you need to let me know so I can turn you on to all the places to go eat. I mean, I'm super, I live in Nashville, and this is a wonderful city, and but I'm still a little biased towards cutting my teeth down in Memphis. I still miss it. It's got a lot of soul. The city is, it's a lot like any of your river cities, you know, like Louisville or St. Louis, mm-hmm. or any of those. It's a transient kind of place. It's a place where the people from rural areas have gone in to try to make something better for themselves, you know. And it's got great food. I miss the food a lot, man, the places to eat. So if you ever go down there, you need to just shoot me a note, and I'll just text you a list of places you need to try out. I mean, there's a lot of places off the beaten path that aren't touristy to go and try food and to find some really cool music.
Cool, man. That sounds great. So, hey, talk about, you guys just played the M3 Festival a couple weeks ago, right?
Oh, my God. It was so awesome. Man, y'all, listen, that's like a bucket list thing for us. That festival has been going on for about 11 years, and we've known about it. We've been in contact with them. We really wanted to try to make it happen for the 10th anniversary, and just logistics and schedules and all that, it wasn't going to work out where we could make it. And we told them last year, we said, we want to come next year no matter what. We're just going to go ahead and try to get them to lock us in to the schedule somehow or another. And, man, to go there and be a part of that and walk out on that stage, man, I mean, that's where one of my old record reps, I'm friends with him, it's a guy named Al Marks. He was one of our record promoters for A&M. He wrote me when he saw we announced that, and he said, I saw Led Zeppelin open for The Who at Meriwether Post Pavilion.
Oh, wow.
And we were like, oh, my God, this is awesome. And, I was like, man, are we sure he's telling us the truth? Is he just messing around with us? But, man, we verified it. Yes, that was true. They also said Janis Joplin played two nights there, you know, when she was up and coming. And so they've done a lot of work on the there was new facilities around it as far as, like, the, you know, where the dressing rooms were and the offices and all that. So it was really nice. But just being on the stage, I didn't want to leave. We had a shorter set, and I got out there and was just like, oh my God, I love it. I don't want to get off here. It's great. And it sounded amazing. The crowd was awesome. It was so fun. And we kind of did a surprise for the people that were attending. We were staying at the Sheraton where most of the M3 people had rooms and were staying and stuff. We flew in Friday night, and we did a surprise three song set in one of the ballrooms there. We went and kicked off like a little, it was kind of like a jam session. There was the people from Enough's Enough, the guitar player Tori was there, and the Black and Blue guys were there. And I think, man, there was a handful of musicians there right when we got there. It was really funny, man. I had a crazy experience, man. My flight got canceled Friday out of Nashville because of the weather. Wherever my flight was originating, they had bad weather, and it just canceled my flight at the last minute. So I was scrambling, and Southwest was nice enough to be accommodating and try to get me there. But they said, you got two choices. You can go to Chicago or you can fly to Tampa. And I said, I just need to get to Baltimore. I don't care wherever you're sending me, but I'd need to be there tonight. And but anyway, I got there, and I didn't get in till late. We got there about 11:30. By the time we got off the airplane, got to the hotel, but we walked in, man, and we walked in, my phone rang, and they said, hey, we're in the ballroom, you ready to play? And I said, yeah, let me just throw my guitar in my room, and I'm headed down. We're ready to do this thing. And it was so great, man. The crowd was so awesome. And I think they had sent out a message, like text some people, and told them that they were going to have a surprise for them in the ballroom for them to show up. And so there was a big crowd, and we got to visit with the dudes. Tori is an amazing guitar player from Enough's Enough. They got up, and he was with some of the Black and Blue guys, and they did Cold Gin by Kiss. They did Highway to Hell. They were just having fun. You know, they were goofing around. And we had jumped up, and we actually did a couple of the songs off the record that they weren't going to hear in the set the next day. So we did, like, Rose of Jericho and Nowhere to Go But Down, and one other song is escaping me right now. But anyway, it was just, I think them having that experience was really fun, and it was an awesome way for us to get to interact with the audience and see everybody and just tell them how much we missed them. You know, it had been a long time since we'd been up on the East Coast. We did one show in 2017. Brad Lee Entertainment had invited us up to do a thing during December of 2017, a sleazy, slimy Sunday. We went and did an event up there for him. And that was our first time up there in like 25 years. So it was just amazing, man. The people were awesome. We cut our teeth up on the East Coast right before the record came out. We spent a few months up there just running up and down the East Coast right before Surprise Attack came out. So it always holds a close spot to our heart. That was the first place we went when we left Memphis. You know, we had never traveled. Before the first record came out, we had never been on tour or anything. We just were a Memphis-based band, and we cut the record in Memphis. And so New York and the East Coast over there, Baltimore and D.C. and all those places, those were our first kind of introductions to being out on the road.
Cool. So what do you got coming up? You have any dates coming up yet?
Yeah, we're super excited. We're headed to Denver this weekend. Wolfpack Productions out there, Anthony and the guys have invited us out. After that, we're doing a really something kind of unique in Memphis. We're doing a really small venue, Lafayette's in Midtown, and we're going to do an acoustic performance. And we're actually recording this. We've never done this before. We always are either, you know, wide open or doing a ballad, you know, as far as our dynamics on stage. But we're going to do an acoustic full set, and we're digging really deep in the catalog. We've gone back and found some things that we really like and that we wanted to just do that we probably would never do in one of our regular sets. So I think it's going to be something really unique, and it'll be something fun for our hometown crowd that kind of kicked us off. It's kind of a way to say thank you to them. You know, we're celebrating 30 years, man. Our first record came out in 1989. So if you would have told me back then that I would still be able to do this and sing and be with these guys, I mean, it just, it means a lot to us. We still enjoy being around each other. You know, we're still telling the same dumb jokes that we've been telling for 30 years, but it's just funny, y'all. I mean, when we go out on the road, you know, it's still the same feeling. We still are crazy about it. We still love the performing part. I could probably do without the, hey, let me borrow your readers. You know, nothing says rock and roll like, hey, let me borrow your dice. I can't figure out what my ticket says.
We wouldn't know anything about that.
I have no idea what you're talking about, man.
I don't know what happened. It's just like overnight, I thought something was wrong with my phone. But I don't know. That's a whole other conversation, I guess. But anyway, we do enjoy each other. But so we got Denver. We're doing Memphis. I think we head to Missouri after that. Then we're headed up to Massachusetts and Maine. We got some tentative dates in Texas, and then I know we're headed up to Chicago at some point. We had to move a date for that. So we're kind of starting to get a little more active. We probably have done a few shows a year where we're kind of doing some one-offs just to kind of stay in touch with each other, you know. We've always stayed close. I mean, we were – I have one sister, and these guys are my brothers, man. I mean, I grew up with them. We had went through all the experiences together from – starting out not knowing anything, and then, you know, having record deals, and then that going away, and then all of us going through, you know, family stuff and all that kind of stuff, raising families and health. And so we've been together a long time, and we don't take it for granted that we get to spend time with each other. When we get to get away with each other and stuff, we really enjoy seeing each other and hanging out and getting to be with all the other people, you know, share time with them. So
yeah, that's cool. Well, man, thank you very much for spending some time with us today. We really appreciate it.
Man, we had the best time talking to you. Thank you so much. I'm serious.
Yeah, absolutely. I do hope you make it to Nashville. I mean, to Nashville. I mean, obviously you're going to make it live there. But I hope you can make it to the Rockin' Pod. But because, I mean, it was great. You just came down and sat down with us, and it was we had a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Man, yeah.
And definitely, you got some energy that is nonstop. I can't imagine what it's like seeing you on a big stage. So hopefully we get to do that pretty soon. That'll be cool.
Well, hopefully we'll see you out on the road somewhere if I miss you here in Nashville. And be sure you guys stay in touch with me. If you do the Memphis trip, let me know, and I'll point you in the right direction.
Oh, I'll do that.
Oh, don't worry. We're going to hunt you down now.
All right, man. That sounds great.
We got
man.
Your numbers, man.
Absolutely, man. Y'all call me anytime. And, man, thanks again for letting me talk about the record, man. It's something we're real proud of. And I appreciate y'all giving us a chance to talk to everybody.
Cool. Where can you find can you give us some give our listeners and viewers where they can find Tora Tora material?
Yes, you can go to toratoramusic.com. We're on all the digital platforms. If you want physical product like an LP, you can get that on Amazon. We're on Spotify, all your normal places where you find stuff. And keep up with us on social media, Tora Tora Band. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. You can find us on any of those. And it's us. We're interacting with you on there. Just a quick note, if you're getting CDs versus vinyls and all that kind of stuff, check out the back of the vinyl, man, when you're getting ready to buy stuff. It's we had a guy named Dean Tomasek. He did the artwork for the album. He's a great artist. And but he's also a musician. He's a bass player. He played in a band called Valentine's Saloon. I don't know if y'all remember those guys from the 80s, but we met up here actually with the Rock and Roll Residency. We did played a show together and jumped up and played some Aerosmith together. They were doing Rocks and Toys and Attic back to back, and Dean and I played on a song together. And this was probably 6 or 7 years ago. But anyway, I knew he did great artwork, and he actually drew Bill Street on the back of the album. The vinyl artwork, man, it looks awesome. It's great.
Cool. I do collect vinyl. Alan doesn't know what vinyl is, but I remember.
I know it. It's really funny.
It's cool. All right, man. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Man, y'all too, man. I hope you have a great night. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.